Hello, it's Friday, January 6th, and you're listening to Wing Radio. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing TV. Today our guest is Mr. Carl Schwartz. I'm sure most everybody out there knows who he is. He's the author of a book called One Way Ticket to Crawford, Texas. He's also a one-time potential presidential candidate, and he received the Wing TV 2005 award for Enigma of the Year. And before we bring Carl on, I want to let everybody know how this interview came about. Late last year, I wrote an article about Carl, and he contacted me via email and then responded to this article with one of his own articles. And one thing I have to say in Carl's credit is that even though I was negative in the article, a lot of people in the alternative media seem to cower and hide, and they refuse to answer for anything, any of their actions. And to his credit, Carl is appearing here today, and he's not running and hiding like so many other people. So when I contacted Carl, set this interview up, I said, you know, we're not going to be like the network company men out there that just toe the party line and throw softballs. We're going to ask you some tough questions, but we're going to be fair with you. And what we want to do in this interview is Carl's done hundreds of interviews himself. And what people ask us is they always ask us about, they don't ask us about Carl's politics or his company. They want to know one thing. They want to know if this guy can be trusted, if he's on the up and up, if he's legitimate. So that's what we're going to talk about today. Carl Schwartz, the man. And last but not least, we hope that Carl doesn't come on in and bullshit us or anything. Is we want just some straight answers, no filibusters like the politicians on TV. So without further ado, we'd like to welcome Mr. Carl Schwartz to Wing TV. How you doing, Carl?
Hi, Carl.
I'm fine, Victor. And you?
Real good, thanks. Now, before we jump into this, why don't you let everyone know how they can find your book, how they can find your website, and anything else?
Okay. The website is, of course, www.carlschwartz.com, and Carl Schwartz is K-A-R-L-S-C-H-W-A-R-Z.com. There's a very interesting interview if people want to listen in. I was interviewed Monday, which is, you know, people are on a holiday, but by Derek and Sharon Gilbert out of St. Louis. They've got a website, peeringintodarkness.com, and they put a four-part interview up there, and there's been a lot of reviews and listening to that. It's not only what I originally started presenting back in August of 2004, but also new information continued to flow in.
All right, so that's carlschwartz.com, and they can also then link to your book there, I'm sure, right?
Yes, there is a purchase button there, and there's a couple other buttons, like my rebuttal to you, and my rebuttal to Madam Karnak, who's somebody I fired from my campaign.
Yeah, we're well familiar with your site. So, all right, Carl, with all that in mind, let's start off like this. There's a lot of people in the alternative media and the Patriot movement who have said quite a few negative things about you. These people come from as various places as California, Europe, New York City, Florida, Australia, Texas, and Canada, just to name a few. In your opinion, why are so many people not only highly critical of you, but they go so far as to question your honesty, your integrity, your business practices, and even if you legitimately own a business? So in other words, what is it about Carl Schwartz that incites so much negativity from so many unrelated, seemingly disparate groups?
Well, there's actually two groups that fall into the basic one, and they're not really patriot groups. What you're basically looking at are two groups. One, they're disruptors on behalf of the federal government that, or other parties that do not want 9/11 ever proven against anybody. And the second group, and we've had some real run-ins and clashes behind the scenes with them, they are people who are trying to spend 9/11 research and findings to where it is all pinned on George Bush and Dick Cheney, and the Democrats are lily white, and come 2006, 2008, they think they can get power back.
Yeah. Well, Carl, is this some kind of, I mean, is this harkening back to, like, Hillary Clinton and some vast conspiracy against you?
No, no, I don't think it's that deep yet, but I can tell you last night, there's a great example. Last night, Stu Webb and Tom Hennigan were bashing me over Deb Simon and myself taking information to Elliot Spitzer. What I had in my hands, had I not turned it over to proper law enforcement authorities, I was concealing a crime. So, I mean, I took a completely legitimate step. Now, why did they come out swinging at me last night? About 10 days ago, I put a piece out not only exposing Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, which I am a well-known expert on. I'm from Little Rock, Arkansas, remember?
Well, we're no fans of the Clintons ourselves.
Yeah. And I have I even turned down two opportunities to run against him as governor of the state of Arkansas in 82 and 84. They wanted me to run in 84 and 86. That's back when the governor terms are still 2 years each. And we also introduced some evidence that we came across. You've seen my recent piece, I think, about the depleted uranium.
Mm-hmm.
Al Gore was up to his earlobes in a privatization of an industry called U.S. Refinement Corporation. And what it is uranium refinement. That's where a lot of the nuclear fuel, nuclear weapons, and depleted uranium byproducts come from.
Okay, Carl. I want to cut in here because I would like people to check that out on your website. I'd like to get to my question, if you don't mind. A couple of years ago, Mike Rupert, peak oil scam artist, became one of the biggest laughing stocks on the Internet and in the Patriot community because it seemed every time he turned around, he was threatening somebody else with a lawsuit, including us. Lately, we seem to be experiencing a sort of deja vu because every time we turn around, you're threatening somebody else with a lawsuit. So I'd like to ask you, to date, exactly how many people have you threatened to sue, and when do you intend to officially bring forth a lawsuit? I mean, are they ever going to solidify, or are they just going to remain virtual arrows?
It'll be filed on them in about 90 days. There are some investigations in progress right now. The people I'm threatening to sue are three people that were intimately involved in my campaign. They were DNC plants. They were people who represented that they wanted a third party, blah, blah, blah. You know, they were tired of the DNC losing elections. And what they did is got inside, got biographical information, working on a book, and then they turned around, twisted all the facts around 180 degrees from the truth, and published it.
What about Larry Lawson? He didn't work on your campaign, did he?
No, not Larry Lawson. But Larry Lawson has been out working with a guy named Tim White. And we already know where Tim White and Larry are coming from.
But don't you know where Stu Webb and Tom Hennigan are coming from, too? They're just deliberate distractions.
Yes, I know. I mean, you haven't heard me on the air with Stu Webb in about 8 months.
Yeah. Well, let's look into this, Carl. And this is something I haven't been able to situate in my mind. As you portray yourself as the owner of a multi-million-dollar company, and we know how much time it takes for a president or a CEO to run their company. They're putting in 10, 12, 14 hours every single day. Yet you write these extremely lengthy articles and do research. There's all the emails that you send, and we've talked about all the phone calls you make. Considering how much time it takes to type and to proofread and do the HTML and the hyperlinks on all these articles, plus, you know, most people need to sleep 6 or 8 hours a day. They need to shower and eat and go for groceries and mow the yard and travel. Yet you're pumping out these long, long articles and emails every single day. A good example would be when I wrote my 2-page article about you, you wrote a 9-page article in response. So it doesn't seem like the mathematics adds up. There's not enough hours in a day. So how does a highfalutin executive find the time to not only run his company, but to spend so much time on this other material?
Well, first off, I'm doing all the writing, but I'm doing that late at night or very early in the morning. I get up 4 or 5 a.m. every morning, 7 days a week. I get a lot done before most people even wake up.
Yeah, we get up at 3:30 every morning.
Secondly, I don't do any of the proofreading. I've got other people that are doing that for me. They even do rewrites.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What we hear a lot from people is that there seems to be a lack of full disclosure on your part, and it troubles a lot of individuals. In the past...
In what way?
Well, via your writings and interviews, it seems like you give the impression that you are, you were, or you want to portray yourself as being involved in U.S. intelligence operations with a lot of these, corporations that can't be traced. Just a second, Carl. That can't be traced or are mysterious. So what exactly is the nature of your role, if any, in U.S. intelligence operations?
None.
Well, you've met with DARPA, is that correct?
I've met with DARPA, that was about business.
That's well, how does the CEO of a startup nanotechnology company somehow get linked up with DARPA?
Well, nanotechnology can be applied in about 100,000 different ways. What we've been discussing with DARPA is five classified things that are actually improvements on existing systems that we have.
Uh-huh.
It would actually lower the cost of the taxpayers over time because the end product would be more durable.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, Carl, I want to get back now to you talking about your writing. And I don't want to sound like I'm bragging, but I've written more than 99.9% of the people in the world. I can confidently say that. I've also edited more than 99% of the people in the world. And the way I see words is the way a mechanic looks at an engine or a surgeon sees a heart while he's operating on it. So I understand words very intimately. And one of the first things I've noticed about your writing is there's hugely different writing styles in your articles and in your responses to articles. And I don't want to sound highly critical, but some of the articles are so illiterate that they're almost unreadable, while other ones are very well-crafted and well-constructed. So the point being is that I've mentioned this, and other people have mentioned it, that it seems like more than one person is writing these articles, and especially this is notable in your 9-page response to my article. So, Carl, who else is writing your articles, or at least assisting you in writing them, and why haven't you mentioned any of these people before?
All they're doing is proofreading, changing sentence structure, syntax. I mean, I type very, very fast. I type from the heart as it comes out. They take it and they modify it sometimes. Sometimes they do not. It all depends on what the subject matter is.
Are you telling us that...
And it almost sounds like some of your people are looking for... what John Stetnor called gnat crap in the sugar.
Well, it's
sentence structure. I mean, I've seen some of your sentence structure, and some of your statements were blatantly wrong.
But it seems like, are you saying that you're deliberately putting out articles that have completely different styles, where some of them are almost illiterate and some of them are very well crafted? And here's an example. It's, you say 37 teams of the scientists and we concealed what identity under Patmos as a holding company. It doesn't even make sense. So you're putting out some stuff that's unreadable and another stuff that's well written. It can't be coming from the same person.
That was just an ad-lib remark to shorten for brevity. I mean, it's not a matter of, we're not talking literature here. I was responding to somebody that posted lies about me.
I think that 37 teams of scientists appears on your website, though, for Patmos Nanotechnology, doesn't it?
No, it does not.
It doesn't?
Yeah, I'm not sure where I got this from, but so you're saying that you are
the Yaya Cannabis site article that was posted by two people that I fired from my campaign.
Yeah, but this was a sentence. You did write that, though, and so you're telling us that you're the only person that writes these articles.
I'm the only person that writes the responses. Now, the email updates that come out and get posted, like on rents and different places,
uh-huh.
A lot of times those are going through other people after I draft them. They're doing editing on them, and then they go out.
All right. In response to Victor's recent article about you, which he just mentioned, you stated that the first print run of your book is nearly sold out and you're preparing to launch a second subsequent print run. But let's clarify, because it's our understanding that there was another separate print run of this book that we don't really hear you mention that involves John Stadtmiller. Can you tell us how many books were printed in that print run and how many of those books have sold to date? And if this is the reason why you claim to have not made any money off of 9/11, because all that money goes back in to cover the cost of that print run associated with Stadtmiller.
Well, the print run was about $9,600. The book has been selling for $24.95. There's about 2,250 books in that run. And there's very, very few books left. I have 9 of them in my possession. The rest of them are at RBN Live.
I mean, at least so,
and that was the only print run of the book.
There was only one print run then?
There was only one print run.
Okay.
Now, another thing that people bring up is this subject of patents. And you've been criticized because there's no public record of the patents under your name or that of Patmos Technology. And
there is in South Carolina.
Okay, well, I'm going to get to that. I'm going to get to that in a second. And, when Madam Karnak asked you to prove the patents. Your response to her, and this is an exact quote, you said, why would I tell a lying bitch like this anything about my company? So one of the reasons you...
And that quote still stands.
Okay. One of the reasons you've given for not showing proof of your patents is that you say that competing companies might swoop in and steal your patents or your research. But, Carl, any company in the world faces the same thing, whether they're in the software business or energy or manufacturing, whatever. So, in other words, everyone faces a threat of competitors stealing their ideas, yet they still publicly publish their patents. So I'm asking you right now.
If you're not in startup mode, no, they do not.
Well, are you willing...
And here's another thing.
Well, let me finish the question, Carl.
Let's get straight. My company is privately held. I don't have to disclose anything to anybody.
Okay, well, here's the final part of the question. Are you willing to provide right now proof that you have these patents, and could we or somebody else, even you on your own website, publish these patents for the whole world to see? Or
no,
is everyone just supposed...
Wait,
Carl. Or is everyone supposed to continue just taking your word for it with no proof?
It is nobody's business, Victor. The answer to your question is no.
Okay, then let me ask you this. As someone purporting to want to run for president of the United States...
I would have to disclose in 07.
Well, hold on a second. Let me ask the question, okay? You've reacted pretty defensively when people began to dig around and investigate you, your activities, your claims, and your companies. So
that is not true.
Hold on. Let me ask the question. Now, anyone with intentions of running for president of the United States, one would reasonably assume that they would anticipate and expect to be fully investigated, and shouldn't the public expect any potential candidate to provide full transparency?
Full transparency when required. Right now, my company is starting up a major plant. We are not going to let the world know what it is we're getting ready to be producing. That is our right. It's privately held. No disclosures are required until 2007.
Uh-huh. All right, well, let me ask you this. Is the public supposed to settle for someone who prefers to be labeled an enigma and remain an enigma? Or someone who is solid that they can put trust and faith in?
Yeah. What it boils down to, Carl.
I'll just be frank with you, an enigma is going to be the only thing that solves 9/11.
Yeah. I mean, what people want to know, Carl, that you've talked about these patents for so long, they want to see something. People, especially in the alternative media, the Patriot movement, aren't just willing to accept things on face value anymore. They want to see proof, and they want to know, when are you going to show us the proof of these
patents?
I mean,
we're talking about a suspicious bunch of people, you know
right.
what I mean? They already don't believe in the media and the government, and they want to have someone they can believe in.
And they want you to show them the proof of these patents.
Well, we're not going to disclose them until we have to, or when it is our business interest to do so.
Okay, fair enough. We'll take that answer as that. Okay, on to the next question, Carl. You've been highly critical of a number of people in the alternative media and the 9/11 field, as was witnessed by your resignation letter, where you you said quite a few things. So after I ask this question, please don't respond by saying that you don't engage in attacking other people in the Patriot movement, because it's evident that you do. And also, you come across, especially in your book, as someone that stands in support of truth and justice in the American way, you know, mom, apple pie, and the American flag. So we here at Wing TV and a lot of other researchers have proven that Alex Jones has betrayed the Gray family in Texas, that he engages in rampant censorship of both his radio show archives and the articles on his website, and he's also a blatant money grubber whose primary objective, it seems, is to buy my video. So I want to ask you, will you take this opportunity, and don't be a company man that applauds Alex Jones's his accolades, but instead, will you take this opportunity to denounce Alex Jones's practices of betraying the Gray family, his rampant censorship, and his money grubbing? Or if you won't denounce it, why won't you? And does this imply that you actually support these kind of behaviors?
Well, first off, I've never been on his show. Secondly, I do not spend any time whatsoever researching Alex Jones, worrying about his business practices or what he addresses. That's his radio show, and I frankly have been focused on other things.
Well, we've proven it, and others have proven it. So if Alex Jones...
That's fine, Victor. I haven't had 5 minutes to waste on that.
Okay. If he is guilty of these things, will you take this moment right now and denounce him for doing those things? Will you denounce Alex Jones for engaging
or anyone for doing things like that?
No, because I haven't looked into the matter myself.
We mean, you talk to Alex Jones on the phone. I mean, it sounds like you have some sort of relationship with
you
Alex
said,
Jones.
You told me just a week or two ago that you spent nearly an hour on the phone with Alex Jones.
Talking
so you're,
about Victor and Daryl Smith.
Right, so you're very well acquainted.
We were discussing something else, Victor. It didn't have anything to do with what you just alleged.
Well, Carl, why are you so apt to point out the wrongdoings in others in this movement, but when you have the opportunity to denounce Alex Jones for things that are much more egregious, why won't you take this opportunity to do that?
Because the people that I've been responding to are people who went out on the internet based on assumption, not fact, and they have posted bald-faced lies about me. Those are the people that I've been squared off with, Victor.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the people, and what you, maybe we have a difference in defining patriot movement. Some of the people that you seem to define as patriots or anything but.
Well, I mean, when you see somebody like Alex Jones who betrays the Gray family down there by selling their videotape
that's
to ABC News.
Welcome to it.
But why won't you denounce him for that? Why won't you speak
Let
out
me
about
put it
that?
This way. You state in one of the things you wrote that you have a team who's digging down to the bottom of the barrel on Daryl Smith. Why don't you do the same on Alex Jones?
Right, why won't you?
Time out. Let me finish. On Daryl Bradford Smith, I'm going to be on the air tonight with his brother.
Uh-huh.
Daryl Bradford Smith has posted the same lies that Madam Karnak, who was somebody I fired, her name's Gina D. Miranda. Bottom line, Daryl wanted to come on board with my campaign. We did a background check. We found a long arrest record, and we said no. And then he starts posting lies about me. That's the type of stuff we're responding to and dealing with.
I'd like you to respond to my question, though. If you have a team that can dig down to the bottom of the barrel on Daryl Bradford Smith, why don't you have a team dig down on some other people you associate with, like Alex Jones?
I don't associate with Alex. I've never been on his show.
But you said just recently, I mean, it's almost impossible to get a hold of Alex Jones, yet you call him on the blink of an eye and talk to him for an hour on the phone. How does that happen?
We were discussing the conversation you and I had, Victor, about Daryl calling you trashing Alex and GCN.
Okay.
But let me finish. We also found out from two other sources, one of them his own brother, and another one, he actually called Statmill and wanted to leave GCN and come back to RBN.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that Lisa always says is when somebody fails to speak out about something, that their silence construes that they're approving of this. So if you don't speak out about these things...
That's not true. I mean,
well, don't you have any curiosity about what we're saying, if you know nothing
about
it?
Yes, I do, but stretching something. I don't spend 5 minutes of my life worrying about Alex Jones.
Do you intend to ask him or investigate this stuff further? Because I would think that someone who wanted to run for president, you know, would have a strong position on what's right and what's wrong.
And these are highly egregious things we're talking about.
Well, I mean, we could discuss highly egregious things about the owner of Sisyphus, but, you know,
like
I don't
that.
Care what Alex Jones says.
Highly egregious? All right, last month, you abandoned the idea of making your run for the presidency, and upon announcing this decision, you simultaneously proceeded to run roughshod against specific individuals within the 9/11 and Patriot community, and you were very highly critical of these groups overall. In light of your opinions, and we know you're a busy person, you're a president and CEO of a successful multi-million-dollar company.
Oh, I've never said that.
What hold on. Let me finish.
I was tied up in research.
Okay, research. Why do you still continue to focus upon and exert such energy upon these individuals and groups that you deride, have no faith in, and believe aren't accomplishing anything worthwhile when you said you were going to wash your hands of them?
The only thing we're focusing on, Lisa, are the people who have willfully posted lies on the internet and have exposed themselves to libel and will be named defendants.
But if you're not going to come out and bring forth any kind of verifiable information about yourself, your company, what you do, what you're engaged in, and things people have questions about and make inquiries about, how are people supposed to know what is true about you, Carl?
Well, you know, Lisa, if what I do for a living and what I'm doing on 9/11 have no comity whatsoever. There's no touch point.
But you were wanting to run for public office, the highest office in this nation, and people have a right to know about you.
Asking until 2007, not 05. These people started in on me in 04.
Okay.
Before I announced.
Okay, Carl, we have two more questions. Mine is, when you broke onto the scene in the Patriot Movement and 9/11 community, people first came to know you with this theory of yours about galvanic corrosion, where you said that the World Trade Center towers were weakened due to galvanic corrosion. Now, I know you're going to spew some rhetoric about being an architect, but when I first interviewed you in 2004, I asked you point blank, I said, if it weren't for the controlled demolitions that morning, are you trying to tell us that the towers would have fallen anyway due to galvanic corrosion? And, you know, mysteriously, we never heard another word ever again about galvanic corrosion. So,
go back and listen to the Peering into Darkness. We covered that in four-part interview just past Monday.
Yeah. Well, the point I'm trying to make is that this galvanic corrosion is a classic definition of a red herring because it was nothing but a distraction. And I want to quote you from your response to my two-page article about you. You said, and this is exact, "I frankly could not care less why the towers came down." That's an exact quote. And to me, that seems like a very outlandish statement to make. So my question is, why did you spend so much time diverting people's attention and engaging in so much debate about this red herring, this galvanic corrosion, and you spent virtually no time whatsoever on the crux issue, which is the controlled demolitions?
Well, listen, the bigger issue that's prosecutable is who attacked those buildings. 3,000 people in them. They knew back in 1988 that those buildings were suffering from galvanic corrosion, which is dissimilar metal contact. There are actually types of alloys to where typically if you're touching aluminum to steel, the aluminum is damaged.
But Carl, the buildings wouldn't have came down that day. Unless it was, why didn't you spend time on the crux issue, controlled demolitions?
Well, that is not a crux issue based on the trail we've been on, Victor.
Oh, that's
on the
hogwash.
The people have been on.
Are you saying galvanic corrosion is the crux issue?
Well, they knew in 1988 that those buildings had to come down and had a life cycle going out to no longer than about 2015.
But the point is, you've even stated on our show that on 9/11... galvanic corrosion wouldn't have brought the towers down, even if the planes didn't hit the buildings.
Yeah, and controlled demolitions did. So why aren't you...
Well, what I was trying to elaborate on, we kind of cut it off that day. I was sitting in the parking lot, if you'll remember that day. I was with you.
Right.
The galvanic corrosion is a weakening process. It's almost like osteoporosis. It finally reaches the stage to where the building itself is not safely occupied.
But are you saying this is more of a crux issue than the controlled demolitions itself?
Yes, because if you go back to
1988,
listen to the date, Victor, they knew in 1988 that those buildings had to come down.
Yeah, that might have been a symptom, but the cause of the buildings coming down was that they put explosives inside of them and brought them down deliberately.
And furthermore, you say that that's the possible... Hold on.
Down control.
Hold on a second.
Galvanic corrosion was one of the two reasons they had to replace them.
Okay, but you say that's prosecutable.
Let me see what our focus has been. Our focus has been, who thought it was a good idea to attack those buildings, to bring them down, which they had to do anyway, with 3,000 people in them?
You say
that's
the prosecutable angle, but who's going to prosecute it?
Elliot
Spitzer dropped the ball.
Yeah, and who's going to prosecute galvanic corrosion? You could prosecute much easier controlled demolition than you could this concept of galvanic corrosion.
I mean, do you really believe we have a decent legal court of law in this country that's going to do the right thing?
I don't now, but you bring up an interesting point, both of you. The reason I announced for president was to lift this entire debate up to where somebody would have the authority, if there was a regime change in Washington, rip the veils off and prove it.
All right.
Nobody has been able to get any traction on any prosecution at all.
Yeah, we know.
I mean, what I took to Spitzer was a $120 billion fraud that was documented by a federal agency.
Yeah. Now, Carl, Lisa has one more question, but before she asks it, why don't you give everybody again your website address and so forth and tell them how they can find your book.
www.carl.carlschwarz.com. KARLSCHWARZ.com.
Okay.
Okay. Now, this question relates to what you were just talking about. You've recounted in your writings the reason why you and Kyle Hentz parted company. Kyle Hentz of Citizens Watch and 911truth.org.
Or 911 Mafia.
Right, the 911 gatekeepers.
He's what I call a circular investigator.
Yeah, we know. Right, we agree with you.
We agree.
You wouldn't divulge certain 9/11 information to him regarding Cantor Fitzgerald and a supposed $120 billion scam that was a possible motive supposedly for 9/11 and purportedly involved banks and other persons in this nation. Now, in your writings, you asserted that Hentz parted company with you when you refused to share the information you took to Spitzer with him, and you've stated that the information's not for public scrutiny. Now, going on from there, you've also stated that Internet researchers cannot possibly deduce what they do not have access to, that being privately held information in your privately held company. So the question is, if this is 9/11 information of great importance, shouldn't 9/11 researchers have full access to scrutinize it as well as allow the public to see it? And Kyle Hentz in the past has said people aren't ready to know the truth. Aren't you kind of doing the same thing by being the determinant of what people should and shouldn't know?
I'll tell you what Patrick told everybody. There are some people named in the documents that may or may not be direct parties to it. For example, there was one party named that was having a $5.4 million squabble with Goldman Sachs. That's how we knew that Goldman Sachs was involved in the transaction. And pulling those people in and having them named. But the other thing Kyle Hentz wanted, he wanted the identity of the federal employee, former federal employee that got these documents to us. That would probably cause that person to lose their life, and you know, he is married, he does have children, so I wasn't going to participate in that. And we basically said, you know, when we can make it public, we will. I mean, one of the things we're going to make public in about 90 days, we've got a document that's almost 10,000 pages, and we're going to introduce Americans to what Al-Qaeda really is.
What Al-Qaeda really is?
What Al-Qaeda really is. This
okay.
was a document that the FBI tried to classify, and they failed to get it classified because it had already been sold to over a dozen foreign intelligence agencies. That's one of the reasons you're seeing our government having so much problems in policy right now, is that some of the foreign intelligence agencies that have this document, this document was actually started in 1993.
Okay.
Almost 10,000 pages.
Well, we'll look forward to hearing that. And Carl, we just want to say thanks for coming on to everybody out there listening today. Some people love him. Some people hate him. But I will give Carl credit. He came on the show.
Yep.
We asked him the tough questions. And there should be a whole hell of a lot more people in the alternative media today that are willing to stand up and answer the tough questions. Because we put Carl in the hot seat. And he's here today. There's a lot of questions we have for a lot of other people that aren't standing up and answering for their actions, and we have to give...
Y'all can be assured, both of you, that when we start making announcements about my company and what we're sitting on, you'll understand why we're being very quiet.
Well, Carl, thanks for coming on today
again. We appreciate
again.
You taking the time, yeah. Carl. We know you're a busy person.
Again, his site is www.carlschwartz.com. We'll be back again on Monday. Have a good weekend. Until then, keep your eyes open because there's a lot going on.
See you then.